Some of these places, people assume that because it's land that it's going to manage itself. We've been inviting people in to explore these places, families, school kids coming in, and then all of a sudden to make cuts to that, to say that this park is now closed to public access, that our schools and our communities can't go there anymore. To me, it's a really troubling development. It's also an issue where a lot of our national parks are sort of co-managed with state parks. I'll give you an example.
Redwoods.
Up there at Redwoods, you got it. So, I mean, a lot of the campgrounds where people go to stay at Redwood National Park are actually at Jedediah Smith State Park, or Del Norte Redwood State Park. And those campgrounds, they also draw in a lot of people that spend money in communities that frankly are somewhat economically depressed. So what happens when suddenly those communities that depend on tourism and depend on the money coming into those areas are impacted by these closures? It's going to have really serious repercussions ecologically, economically, and it really just doesn't make sense to close our state parks as a so-called solution to a budget crisis. It's going to have some really devastating effects.
Good morning, I'm Tommy Howell, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. In 1868, John Muir arrived in San Francisco and began his legendary trip from the Bay to the Sierras. He crossed the coast ranges at Pacheco Pass in modern-day Santa Clara County, and from the summit beheld the vista of the wild San Joaquin Valley, which at the time was a vast, verdant wetland of wildflowers and green fields stretching all the way to the foothills of the Sierras. Eventually, Muir made his way to a place in the Sierras called Yosemite on the Merced River, and he decided that he'd arrived home. At his urging and through his and others' activism, Yosemite was eventually put under the protection of the state of California as a California state park for all to enjoy, and so all could see Yosemite in its natural, wild state forever. Word got out about Yosemite, and it wasn't long before Yosemite was adopted by the United States as America's first national park. So while Yosemite wasn't in the California state park's domain for very long, it was an auspicious beginning for the Golden State's determined legacy to protect its most special and valued places. Big Basin Redwood State Park in the Santa Cruz Mountains followed in 1902, again, like Yosemite, created at the urging of local conservation and citizens groups. And since then, 278 additional special places have been added to the roster of California state parks in every corner of the state, from the southern deserts to the central coast to the towering redwoods in the north. And over time, California state parks have justifiably become the envy of the nation. Today, at this hour, California state parks face a threat, and it's unlike any threat the parks have faced before. The threats come not from fires, earthquakes, or storms, but from the threat of closure, of padlocking and sealing off 80% of a park system as part of a proposal to help undo California's $22 billion budget deficit. After surviving a brush with mass closures in 2008 and the hard-fought Save Trestles campaign at San Onofre State Beach, which many of us in Southern California are quite familiar with, the governor's current recommendation to mothball, padlock, and cut off Californians from their state parks in the name of fiscal necessity is, in the opinion of this program and this commentator, very rash. If 80% of California state park system is shuttered, it will only be more difficult and more expensive to reverse those closures and reopen them ever again. What we stand to lose, even for a year or two, is priceless. Just as our national parks are beginning to reinvest in themselves, the state, the caretakers to whom we entrust the care of these parks in good times and bad times, is going to close them down, with barely a word about the money the parks put back into local economies around them, from bait and tackle shops and restaurants and motels, to the positive mental health of Californians who may not be as financially well off as their neighbor, but who also seek solace, quiet, and adventure in the wild without having to go to Mount Everest or the Amazon to find it. According to a 2002 survey conducted by California State Parks itself, state parks brought $6.5 billion in revenue to private businesses around the state, even though state parks take up less than 0.1% of the entire state budget. The list of state parks to be closed reads like a who's who of amazing places in California, and with 80% of the 279 state parks earmarked for closure, it's not a matter of what's going to be closed, but what's going to stay open. Here in San Diego, every state park and state beach would be closed except Old Town, Cardiff, San Onofre, and the Ocotillo Well State Vehicular Area. That means Palomar Mountain State Park, Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, and the massive Anza Borrego Desert State Park, all parks since 1933, will be closed. Borderfield, the Silver Strand, Carlsbad, and Torrey Pines State Beaches will all be closed, as will Torrey Pines State Reserve, home of the exceptionally rare Torrey Pine. 8 out of the 10 state parks in San Luis Obispo County will be closed. Every state park in Santa Cruz County will close. Nearly every state park in the Bay Area will be closed, and that includes Mount Diablo and Mount Tamalpais. Calaveras Big Trees, a state park since 1931 and home to thousands of old-growth sequoia in the Sierra foothills, will be closed. Montaña de Oro, one of the largest tracts of open public land along the central coast and one of the most stunning coastal locales in all of California, will be closed. Humboldt Redwood State Park, the Antelope Valley Poppy Reserve, the Bodie State Historic Park Ghost Town, Carpinteria State Beach, Castle Crag State Park near Lake Shasta, Henry Coe State Park near San Jose, Chino Hills, Del Norte Redwoods, the Folsom Powerhouse, El Capitan State Beach, Fort Ord, Fort Ross, Fort Tejon, Half Moon Bay, Henry Cowell Redwoods, Julia Pfeiffer Burns, Leo Carrillo State Beach, Portola Redwoods, Red Rock Canyon, Sutter's Fort, the Tahoe State Recreation Area, even the Donner Memorial, all slated to be closed, along with hundreds more. I can't even begin to list them all. Joining us today to talk about this imminent threat to close 80% of California state parks is Tracy Verardo Torres, the legislative and policy director for the California State Parks Foundation. She last joined us in the midst of the fight to save trestles in San Onofre State Beach. Also joining us is Mike Cipra, the California Desert Program Manager for the National Parks Conservation Association. Tracy, Mike, it's great to have the two of you here. Welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Thanks, Tommy.
Great to be here. Thanks for the invitation to come on.
Tracy, let's begin with you. I can only imagine the reaction at the California State Parks Foundation when you finally got that list of all those parks to be closed.
We were shocked at the magnitude of the closures that were proposed. Whether you call yourself a park advocate or not, I think it has turned a lot of people into park advocates now. These closures and lifeguard staffing reductions really strike at the heart of what people find as part of California's quality of life.
And the amount of money involved is so microscopic compared to the overall financial burden the state is going through right now. The amount of money that the state's going to have to pay to go back and reopen and reboot those parks, it's going to take so much money and so much time just to get them back to the point where they're at now.
I think that's a really great point. When you shut something down, it takes extra money, extra resources to plan for that, and then to start it back up. Again, it requires that infusion of resources, not to mention all the people they would put out of work. I think that it is really significant. I think Californians agree that our state parks are really important and are worth funding, are worth protecting, are worth visiting. Those are some iconic and special places. It would be almost like the president in Congress closing Yosemite or Yellowstone. It's something that's really significant and serious and shouldn't be taken lightly.
And how do you close off the outdoors? how do you put a cage around it?
Right.
You don't close off the outdoors.
And you talk about a park down here like Anza Borrego.
Oh my goodness, where do you start?
Are you going to put gates on those roads? I mean, there are communities inside that state park, and there's some significant cultural resources, talking about petroglyphs and rock art. You know, what happens when there's no more protection for those areas? Those are things that we can't get back if they're destroyed or they're lost. There's no getting those back. And the stakes, in my mind, are much too high for us to be closing our state parks.
I shudder to think of what could happen with Anza Borrego. I really do. Without some kind of apparatus there managing it. Without the understanding that you're entering a state park, I just dread the idea of what's going to happen to those cultural resources, those natural resources, how it's been managed as a state park since 1933, and all of a sudden you're going to undo, or at least no longer see to it that those regulations that were put in place back in the 30s are going to be followed now.
Absolutely. I mean, species like Peninsular Bighorn Sheep, that's an endangered species. And, what happens when suddenly there's no management of that area? Is there going to be poaching? There are all kinds of issues. And it's ecological, it's cultural, and it's economic. And these are places that are really special. And I think they're special to not just Californians, but to people from all over the country. Take another example of parks that are sort of intertwined. Santa Monica Mountains, where it's got this series of state parks that are intertwined with the Santa Monica National Recreation Area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this co-management that's going on to protect the ecological integrity of that area. What happens when suddenly you take the state parks out of that equation? It's going to have really, really potentially devastating impacts on multiple communities, parks, national parks, state parks.
It's a functional co-management. It works really well between the state and the feds there.
Absolutely. It's kind of a prime example of how to do it right. And then to suddenly take that away, it's not necessarily the best choice.
Yeah, and are you going to wind up closing off the state portions of the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area, but leave the federal portions of that park open?
Many of the parks on the list, people strongly disagree, can close. I mean, I know we were talking with some folks at Topanga, and they said there's at least 40 ungated entrances into the park. So that's going to be almost impossible to keep people out. And the point of the state park system was never to keep people out. It was actually to encourage people to come in and go. So, you know, some of these state historic parks, sure, you can lock the doors and you can close the buildings up, but you're doing more than just locking a building up and closing the doors. You're locking out thousands of school kids who come to these parks and use them to bring California's history and curriculum alive. And, you know, it's an interesting note. By law, state parks cannot charge school groups when they're coming to bring kids on field trips. And I don't think anybody's proposing to change that. But when we look at these visitation and revenue numbers, we have to acknowledge some of these parks are highly visited but don't have a lot of revenue because they're serving people we don't want to charge. They're bringing kids in so they can, you know, learn their California history, do their fourth grade curriculum, go to Sutter's Fort, go to La Purísima Mission, go to these other state historic parks where they're learning about the history in a way that for most kids is more entertaining and more engaging than sitting in the classroom and reading it from a book. And it's important that we have these places available to them to do that.
You know, if these parks are closed, I wasn't exactly picturing them all being mothballed, so to speak, but it's possible some of these parks might go to counties, municipalities, conservation groups. Is it possible some folks may step up and take over operation of those parks?
Well, that's been suggested, but I will say local governments are in no better position to be taking over state parks than the state park system is to maintain its own properties. And in fact, most local governments are struggling now to maintain their own city, county, and regional parks. I mean, they're having the same problems, particularly around maintenance and operations funding, to keep parks open, to keep them accessible to the public. So I'm not aware, you know, we at the foundation are not aware of any local government that has leapt forward and said, absolutely, we've got the resources and the people power to take these over. It is possible, and I would say that's maybe a contingency plan. I mean, right now the focus is on fighting these and making sure the legislature, which now has a responsibility of dealing with the budget the governor's proposed, says this is not an issue we're going to entertain. We are not going to close these parks. Now, figuring out how to keep them open, you know, is an important second question. But the first response we need the legislature to have is we're absolutely not going to close them and we're going to continue the public commitment to them. Now, nonprofit groups are already doing a lot to support state parks. In fact, in many of the state parks in this area and throughout California, you've got volunteer docents. You've even got people doing, you know, education programs themselves. You've got people running visitor centers. You've got, you know, volunteers coming out to do restoration or beautification projects in the park. You've already got a lot of public involvement from the nonprofit side. But people who come to be docents in nonprofits don't want to clean bathrooms. They don't want to go, you know, walk up on the roof and check the shingles. We in the nonprofit community do what we do best, which is bring volunteers to do added value activities to the state park system. And in some ways, you know, we are providing basic information and basic education and basic interpretation. But I think it will be very difficult to find any nonprofit that would be able to step in and do what's left. I mean, here's the reality. People talk a lot about fat in government, and let's just cut the fat. Well, it's got to be, I hope, indicative to most people in California that there's no fat in the state park system. The jobs that nonprofit partners and that others could be doing on a volunteer basis and for free for the state, they're already doing. The jobs that are left, you know, what costs the state money to keep the parks open are skilled park staff who are willing to do jobs that, you know, have kind of a long-term vision. Volunteers are wonderful. We use volunteers in our organization, and we work with volunteers throughout the year as well. But as I mentioned, you know, the work of keeping a park open, again, doing maintenance work in the park, doing skilled changes to the park system and, you know, trail maintenance, and let's not forget law enforcement. I mean, you can't find volunteer groups that are ready to do that. And those are the fundamental jobs of government to be able to provide for basic services when we're talking about our state park system.
Well, the whole proposal to close 80% of California state parks is certainly alarming to this program, and it's alarming to a lot of other Californians as well. Mitchell Caverns was also earmarked for closure last year when that was suggested as well. And at the time, I was there and I asked some folks with the Mojave National Preserve if somehow they'd be able to take over operations at Mitchell Caverns if that came to pass. I'm wondering if that might happen again this time around if Mitchell Caverns is closed.
I think there's some serious issues with that. One is that the park professionals there at Mitchell Caverns State Park are trained to lead those cave tours. They're really familiar with the resources there, with the management of it. And I think it's important to respect the fact that they have expertise in that area. I'm not saying that the National Preserve couldn't do it, but to put it in perspective, Tommy, the Mojave National Preserve, for 1.6 million acres, has eight law enforcement rangers. Eight. And they have to deal with things sometimes out there like train robberies. It's an issue of funding. If an agency is properly funded to fulfill its mission, it'll be able to do that. These areas are important. And these areas are important for multiple reasons, and we need to keep them running and keep them running effectively. And that does require money and investment of resources.
Is raising the entrance fees to parks something that might be offered in a compromise? And the reason I ask that is because we can often say that state parks are a form of inexpensive entertainment for families who can't take everyone to go off to the movies mm-hmm. or take a big vacation and go miles and can't go to Jamaica. Were entrance fees being raised? Is that something that's on the table, perhaps?
It's being bandied about. I mean, in addition to the idea of maybe could local governments take over, maybe could nonprofits user fees have become part of the picture. California state parks have the highest overnight accommodations per night charge than any state park in the country. And as you mentioned, they're still a bargain, but they are the highest. And, you know, they do vary. There are some places in California that, because they're more popular, it does cost a little bit more to camp some of the camping spots on the Central Coast and in Santa Cruz and actually here in San Diego are a little bit more expensive than other parks you might find throughout the state because you're able to kind of see that the public will bear the cost of that. It may be that the public has to do that, but at the State Parks Foundation, our perspective is while it's important to perhaps keep that in the mix, we can't keep asking people to pay more and get less. And that's a key part of it. I mean, really what we're arguing with this whole budget crisis is, as I mentioned before, nickels and dimes. I mean, we're fighting, you know, tooth and nail simply to keep the doors to parks open. And while that's an important fight we're going to deal with this year, we've got to realize we're fighting basically to get to adequacy. We're not even talking about what's an excellent state park system look for, like for California. What's the, you know, vision that we have for our state park system? And in some ways, being in this kind of bunker of looking at how do we just get to the bare minimum, I think may push us all to think this isn't enough. We've got to fight for more. We've got to fight for more stable funding. We've got to fight for sustainability in our state park system so that we, A, don't ever see a proposal like this again, And B, we get beyond just asking people to pay for less and less, pay more and more for less and less, and actually start to improve and enhance and expand the kind of experience people want in their state parks.
Yeah, let me ask you a slightly wonkish question here, because when Schwarzenegger took over from Governor Davis in 2003, the first year, full year he was in 2004, he raised the fees to get into the parks. I was told, and I want to say it was, I was told by someone with the California State Parks Foundation that that really had to be done because Gray was really running on this crazy deficit and he really had to raise the rates. Otherwise, it really would have been going broke.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any truth to that?
Well, under the Davis administration, fees were actually cut in half, and in some places, fees were eliminated altogether because, hard to remember, but times were pretty good a few years ago in California, and people were getting into state parks either for free or for very minimal, you know, $1 or $2 entrance fees. So they started to hike back a little bit at the end of the Davis administration, but they did come back more under the Schwarzenegger administration. I think there is some importance to having some fee so that when people are coming into the state park system, they feel invested in that system's future and in that system's maintenance and creation and improvement. But the other side of raising fees is there is fee avoidance that happens now. I mean, we know in some parts, and maybe in some of the parks that you're familiar with, it's easy for people to park outside and walk in. And so they're not paying the fee. They're getting all the benefits that everybody who is paying the fee is, but they're not paying it. Some of that's deliberate, and some of that just happens because sometimes you can't find where you're supposed to pay your money. So raising fees might actually contribute to more people deliberately avoiding the fee. And then you mentioned before the affordability of state parks. I mean, raising fees may also be one thing that contributes to people not coming in the first place. And I think we have to be careful of that in the system. So in some ways, I think the Schwarzenegger administration, well, they certainly have inherited part of the budget problem here for state parks. I mean, it's not as though people woke up this year and said, oh, state parks doesn't have enough money. I mean, we have all known in the parks advocacy community for years that the state park system, you know, for the last decade, 15 years, has really been starved to the bone because other priorities in the state have just gotten more money and state parks hasn't. And, you know, we want to reverse that and work with this administration, work with the legislature, work with whoever we have to. Doesn't matter to us, you know, what side of the aisle gets credit for this, but we've all got to solve this problem.
You know, on a busy weekend, we'll bring in anywhere from 800 to 1,000 people. And those 800 to 1,000 people park. They purchase sandwiches to go to the island. They might buy a sweatshirt, sunscreen. They may stay at the hotels, come back and have dinner.
Have a huge impact on us. A lot of people be affected by that.
Ferry boat captain describes the domino effect that would come from closing state parks. At least 25 in the Bay Area are on the line.
One of the governor's budget cutting proposals also involves California state parks.
Yeah, the plan could force the closure of some very popular state parks.
From blacksmiths
fire!
To the always popular cannon fire demo, generations of school kids have watched history come alive at Sutter's Fort in downtown Sacramento.
We saw a lot of facts about Sutter, and we saw the covered wagon is right over there.
The kids just really get a hands-on experience with all the things that we're learning in class about the gold rush, and they learn a lot about John Sutter, and it just really allows them to kind of experience it firsthand.
But Sutter's Fort is in very real danger of closing down.
That's not very good.
Why not?
Because this place is really cool.
A new budget proposal from the governor would shut down 80% of the state's parks, including several on the Central Coast. The loss would close 8 parks and beaches in San Luis Obispo County, including Montaña de Oro State Park, Morro Bay State Park, and Santa Barbara County. 10 parks and beaches are on the chopping block.
Governor Schwarzenegger is proposing to eliminate all general fund contributions to California's 279 state parks within 2 years. It could force some to close down entirely.
People don't want revenue enhancements, and the only option left is cuts. We are deadly serious that we have reached the cliff. This is not a scare tactic. So if all of our general fund is eliminated, we have only one option left. To close parks.
I think it would be devastating for the school communities that learn a lot coming here.
I think they shouldn't shut the place down.
Palomar Mountain State Park, a wonderland in winter. A potential wasteland in this state budget cycle? Could Torrey Pines Reserve be put off limits? Cuyamaca Rancho State Park closed to visitors.
Sutter's Fort could go the way of the covered wagon.
The family-owned Angel Island Tiburon Ferry has been carrying tourists, nature lovers, and history buffs to and from for decades. It means 90% of the McDonough family's income and about $1 million a year for the town.
But essentially what we understand is that they could be entirely closed, so they'd be off limits to the general public coming in.
That would apply at all the state parks on the hit list, including the 25 here in the Bay Area. That includes Pacifica Beach, Pigeon Point, Henry Coe State Park.
I think they shouldn't shut the place down.
Mount Tamalpais State Park may end up turning away its approximately 600,000 annual visitors.
Not a good thing.
Not a good thing?
Not a good thing.
How come?
I'm on there every day, and it's beautiful.
For some, the loss cannot be measured in dollars and cents. It's more of a feeling, says this East Bay student just returned from Angel Island.
I think it would be sad, and it's just a great place.
And it's beautiful.
And it's just a great place.
And it's beautiful. 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 It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Cuyamaca was always one of my favorite, camping and hiking there, not just because I spent time in college here in San Diego, but because this is, you know, close to my heart. Having been someone who grew up my life on the East Coast and Midwest, I have to say, hands down, the beaches are just fantastic. And, you know, Carlsbad, San Alejo, some of those are wonderful. San Onofre, clearly. My folks and I have camped there and we've gone to the beaches. That's great. And then I do have to say, being in Northern California now, many of the parks up in Tahoe, Sugar Pine Point is one of my favorite, Emerald Bay, really gorgeous, spectacular places. And I think I view state parks the way a lot of people do, places to go and just take a breath and be able to smell some fresh air or have a connection to water or have a connection to something natural that isn't about traffic and noise and development, commercialization and all of that. Having a place of solitude is great. But, you know, so many of our state parks really do tell the story of California's history and, frankly, have the fabric of California's history woven into it. And I think it's interesting, not just for history buffs, but for people who actually care about how the state has come to be what it is. Folsom Powerhouse is really interesting. I mean, we actually do have a state park that commemorates power and electricity and its founding in a way that, you know, sort of tells the history. And that park and the volunteers at that park have been really cognizant of telling the history in a way that makes clear to people coming through the powerhouse, there have to be ways for us to balance these kind of competing interests. So it's a chance to educate and advocate with the public through that park, too.
Right. And the powerhouses of the era as well, when
yes,
water was, you needed that to get energy.
We're lucky, I think, for those of us who are able to go to state parks and maybe have some history of going with our parents. There's 278 state parks in California. They're all worth protecting. They're all worth fighting for, and they're all worth visiting. But ultimately, really encourage listeners to visit our website, calparks.org. This is the time for us to be active as citizens and advocates on behalf of the things that matter to us most. And that's not to say people aren't concerned about education and healthcare and other things, but there's an intersection with those issues in parks too. I mean, state parks are the second largest provider of education, second only to the public school system, given the number of kids who come through every year for these living history programs. And we don't want these closures to stop that for these kids. And state parks are a place for people to go and have a chance to breathe some air and not have to use their inhaler. And these are places we want to see stay available, and we need more Californians to join us in that fight.
Quality of life.
Absolutely. That's why many of us relocate to California from other places.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Big thanks again to our guests today, Tracy Verardo-Torres from the California State Parks Foundation, and Mike Cipra from the National Parks Conservation Association. To learn more and to take action, check out the California State Parks Foundation at www.calparks.org. That's calparks.org. CALPARKS.ORG. You can find the entire list of state parks to be closed there, as well as an online letter you can sign and have sent automatically to your state legislators and Governor Schwarzenegger. It's at www.calparks.org. You can also find a similar online letter at the Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks website, and that's at www.thatsmypark.org. You heard right, www.thatsmypark.org. Between the Friends of Santa Cruz State Parks and the overall California State Parks Foundation, you can begin making your voice heard. You may also want to reach out to Governor Schwarzenegger and your local state legislators with a phone call, or even better, a letter, and let them know how you feel. You can find information for the governor at www.gov.ca.gov. That's www.gov.ca.gov. You can track down your state legislators at www.legislature.ca.gov. That's legislature.ca.gov. And from that website, you can locate your senator and assemblyperson by district. If you call, please be sure to speak well, stick to your points, and above all else, be polite. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff or management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information, I invite you to go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM 94.9 website. That's www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just click on the Tree Huggers International logo on the FM 94.9 website. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.